home? Stokes laughed. He mocked Bosch in an imitation. Did he have trouble at home? Like, who didn't, man? Was he abused, physically abused at home, is what I mean. Again, laughter. Who wasn't? My old man, he'd rather take a shot at me than talk to me about anything. When I was 12, he hit me from across the room with a full can of beer, just because I ate a taco he wanted. They took me away from him for that. You know, that's a real shame. But we're talking about Arthur Delacroix here. Did he ever tell you his father hit him? He didn't have to, man. I saw the bruises. The guy always had a black eye, is what I remember. That was from skateboarding. He fell a lot. Stokes shook his head. Fuck that, man. Artie was the best. That's all he did. He was too good to get hurt. Bosch's feet were flat on the floor. He could tell by the sudden vibrations through his soles that there were people in the squad room now. He reached over and pushed the button lock on the doorknob. You remember when he was in the hospital? He'd hurt his head? Did he tell you that it was from a skateboarding accident? Stokes knitted his brow and looked down. Bosch had jogged loose a direct memory, he could tell. I remember he had a shaved head and stitches like a fucking zipper. I can't remember what he... Someone tried the door from the outside, and then there was a harsh banging on the door. A muffled voice came through. Detective Bosch, this is Lieutenant Gilmore, OIS. Open the door. Stokes suddenly reared back, panic filling his eyes. No, don't let them... Shut up! Bosch leaned across the table, grabbed Stokes by the collar, and pulled him forward. Listen to me. This is important. There was another knock on the door. Are you saying that Arthur never told you his father hurt him? Look, man, take care of me here and I'll say whatever the fuck you want me to say, okay? His father was an asshole. You want me to say Artie told me his father beat him with a goddamn broomstick? I'll say it. You want it to be a baseball bat? Fine, I'll say. I don't want you to say anything but the truth, goddammit. Did he ever tell you that or not? The door came open. They had gotten a key from the drawer at the front desk. Two men in suits came in. Gilmore, whom Bosch recognized, and another OIS detective Bosch didn't recognize. All right, this is over, Gilmore announced. Bosch, what the fuck are you doing? Did he? Bosch said to Stokes. The other OIS detective took keys from his pocket and started taking the cuffs off of Stokes' wrists. I didn't do anything, Stokes started to protest. I didn't... Did he ever tell you? Bosch yelled. Get him out of here, Gilmore barked to the other detective. Put him in another room. The detective physically lifted Stokes from his seat and half carried, half pushed him out of the room. Bosch's cuffs remained on the table. Bosch stared blankly at them, thinking of the answers Stokes had given him, and feeling a terrible weight on his chest from the knowledge that the whole thing had been a dead end. Stokes added nothing to the case. Julia had been shot. And it was for nothing. He finally looked up at Gilmore, who closed the door and then turned to face Bosch. Now, like I said, what the fuck were you doing, Bosch? Chapter 33 Gilmore twiddled a pencil in his fingers, drumming the eraser on the table. Bosch never trusted an investigator who took notes in pencil. But that's what the officer-involved shooting team was all about, making stories and facts fit the picture the department wanted to present to the public. It was a pencil squad. To get it right often meant using the pencil and eraser, never ink, never a tape recorder. So we're going to go over this again, he said. Tell me once more, what did Officer Brasher do? Bosch looked past him. He had been moved to the suspect's chair in the interview room. He was facing the mirror. The one-way glass behind which he was sure there were at least a half dozen people, probably including Deputy Chief Irving. He wondered if anybody had noticed that the video had been running. If they had, it would have immediately been shut off. Somehow she shot herself. And you saw this? Not exactly. I saw it from the rear. Her back was to me. Then how do you know she shot herself? because there was no one else there but her, me, and Stokes. I didn't shoot her, and Stokes didn't shoot her. She shot herself. During the struggle with Stokes. Bosch shook his head. No, there was no struggle at the moment of the shooting. I don't know what happened before I got there, but at the moment of the shooting, Stokes had both hands flat on the wall and his back to her when the gun went off. Officer Brasher had her hand on his back, holding him in place. I saw her step back from him and drop her hand. I didn't see the gun, but I then heard the shot and saw the flash originate in front of her. And she went down. Gilmore drummed his pencil loudly on the table. That's probably messing up the recording, Bosch said. Oh, that's right. You guys never put anything on tape. Never mind that. Then what happened? I started moving toward them at the wall. Stokes started to turn to see what had happened. From the ground, Officer Brasher raised her right arm and took aim with her weapon at Stokes. But she didn't fire, did she? No. I yelled freeze to Stokes, and she did not fire, and he did not move. I then moved to the scene and put Stokes on the ground. I handcuffed him. I then used the radio to call for help and tried to tend to Officer Brasher's wound as best I could. Gilmore was also chewing gum in a loud way that annoyed Bosch. He worked it for several chews before speaking. See, what I'm not getting here is why would she shoot herself? You'll have to ask her that. I'm only telling you what I saw. Yeah, but I'm asking you. You were there. What do you think? Bosch waited a long moment. Things had happened so fast. He had put off thinking about the garage by concentrating on Stokes. Now the images of what he had seen kept replaying in his mind. He finally shrugged. I don't know. I'll tell you what. Let's go your way with it for a minute. Let's assume she was reholstering her weapon, which would have been against procedures, but let's assume it for the sake of argument. She's reholstering so she can cuff the guy. Her holster is on her right hip, and the entry wound is on the left shoulder. How does that happen? Bosch thought about Brasher's questioning him a few nights earlier about the scar on his left shoulder, about being shot and what it had felt like. He felt the room closing in, getting tight on him. He started sweating. I don't know, he said. You don't know very much, do you, Bosch? I only know what I saw. I told you what I saw. Bosch wished they hadn't taken away Stokes's pack of cigarettes. What was your relationship with Officer Brasher? Bosch looked down at the table. What do you mean? From what I hear, you were fucking her. That's what I mean. What's it have to do with anything? I don't know. Maybe you tell me. Bosch didn't answer. He worked hard not to show the fury building inside. Well, first off, this relationship of yours was a violation of department policy, Gilmore said. You know that, don't you? She's in patrol. I'm in detective services. You think that matters? That doesn't matter. You're a D3, that's supervisor level. She's a grunt and a rookie, no less. If this was the military, you'd get a dishonorable just for starters. Maybe even some custody time. But this is the LAPD, so what's it get me, a promotion? That was the first offensive move Bosch had made. It was a warning to Gilmore to go another way. It was a veiled reference to several well-known and not-so-well-known dalliances between high-ranking officers and members of the rank and file. It was known that the police union, which represented the rank and file to the level of sergeant, was waiting with the goods, ready to challenge any disciplinary action taken under the department's so-called sexual harassment policy. I don't need any smart remarks from you, Gilmore said. I'm trying to conduct an investigation here. He followed this with an extended drum roll while he looked at the few notes he had written on his pad. What he was doing, Bosch knew, was conducting a reverse investigation. Start with a conclusion, and then gather only the facts that support it. How are your eyes? Gilmore finally asked, without looking up. One of them still stings like a son of a bitch. They feel like poached eggs. Now, you say that Stokes hit you in the face with a shot from his bottle of cleaner.
Correct.
And it momentarily blinded you.
Correct.
Now Gilmore stood up and started pacing in the small space behind his chair. How long between the moment you were blinded and when you were down in that dark garage and supposedly saw her shoot herself? Bosch thought for a moment. Well, I used a hose to wash my eyes, then I followed the pursuit. I would say not more than 5 minutes, but not too much less. So you went from blind man to Eagle Scout, able to see everything, inside of 5 minutes. I wouldn't characterize it like that, but you have the time right. Well, at least I got something right. Thank you.
No problem, Lieutenant.
So you're saying you didn't see the struggle for control of Officer Brasher's gun before the shot occurred. Is that correct?
He had his hands clasped behind his back, the pencil between two fingers like a cigarette.
Bosch leaned across the table. He understood the game of semantics Gilmore was playing.
Don't play with words, Lieutenant. There was no struggle. I saw no struggle because there was no struggle. If there had been a struggle, I would have seen it. Is that clear enough for you?
Gilmore didn't respond. He kept pacing. Look, Bosch said. Why don't you just go do a GSR test on Stokes? His hands, his jumpsuit. You won't find anything. That should end this pretty quick. Gilmore came back to his chair and leaned down on it. He looked at Bosch and shook his head. You know, Detective, I would love to do that. Normally, in a situation like this, first thing we do is look for gunshot residue. The problem is, you broke the box. You took it upon yourself to take Stokes out of the crime scene and bring him back here. The chain of evidence was broken, you understand that? He could have washed himself, changed his clothes, I don't know what else, because you took it upon yourself to take him from the crime scene. Bosch was ready for that. I felt there was a safety issue there. My partner will back me on that. So will Stokes. And he was never out of my custody and control until you came busting in here. That doesn't change the fact that you thought your case was more important than us getting the facts about a shooting of an officer of this department, does it? Bosch had no answer for that. But he was now coming to a full understanding of what Gilmore was doing. It was important for him and the department to conclude and be able to announce that Brasher was shot during a struggle for control of her gun. It was heroic that way. And it was something the department public relations machine could take advantage of and run with. There was nothing like the shooting of a good cop, a female rookie no less, in the line of duty to help remind the public of all that was good and noble about their police department, and all that was dangerous about the police officer's duty. The alternative, to announce that Brasher had shot herself accidentally, or even something worse, would be an embarrassment for the department. One more in a long line of public relations fiascos. Standing in the way of the conclusion Gilmore, and therefore Irving and the department brass, wanted, was Stokes, of course, and then Bosch. Stokes was no problem. A convicted felon facing prison time for shooting a cop, whatever he said, would be self-serving and unimportant. But Bosch was an eyewitness with a badge. Gilmore had to change his account or, failing that, taint it. The first soft spot to attack was Bosch's physical condition. Considering what had been thrown in his eyes, could he actually have seen what he claimed to have seen? The second move was to go after Bosch, the detective. In order to preserve Stokes as a witness in his murder case, would Bosch go so far as to lie about seeing Stokes shoot a cop? To Bosch, it was so outlandish as to be bizarre. But over the years, he had seen even worse things happen to cops who had stepped in front of the machinery that produced the image of the department that was delivered to the public.
Wait a minute, you...
Bosch said, able to hold himself from calling a superior officer an expletive. If you're trying to say I would lie about Stokes shooting Julia, Officer Brasher,
so he would stay in the clear for my case, then you, with all due respect, are out of your fucking mind. Detective Bosch, I am exploring all possibilities here. It is my job to do so. Well, you can explore them without me. Bosch stood up and went to the door. Where are you going? I'm done with this. He glanced at the mirror and opened the door, then looked back at Gilmore. I got news for you, Lieutenant. Your theory is for shit. Stokes is nothing to my case, a zero. Julia getting shot, it was for nothing. But you didn't know that until you got him in here, did you? Bosch looked at him, and then slowly shook his head. Have a good day, Lieutenant. He turned to go through the door and almost stepped into Irving. The deputy chief stood ramrod straight in the hallway outside the room. Step back inside for a moment, detective, he said calmly. Please. Bosch backed into the room. Irving followed him in. Lieutenant, give us some space here, the deputy chief said. And I want everyone out of the viewing room as well. He pointed at the mirror as he said this. Yes, sir, Gilmore said, and he left the room, closing the door behind him. Take your seat again, Irving said. Bosch moved back to the seat facing the mirror. Irving remained standing. After a moment, he also started pacing, moving back and forth in front of the mirror, a double image for Bosch to track. We are going to call the shooting accidental, Irving said, not looking at Bosch. Officer Brasher apprehended the suspect and, while reholstering her weapon, inadvertently fired the shot. Is that what she said? Bosch asked. Irving looked momentarily confused, then shook his head. As far as I know, she only spoke to you, and you said she didn't say anything specifically in regard to the shooting. Bosch nodded. So that's the end of it? I don't see why it should go any further. Bosch thought of the photo of the shark on Julia's mantle, about what he knew about her in such a short time with her. Again, the images of what he saw in the garage played back in slow motion, and things didn't add up. If we can't be honest with ourselves, how can we ever tell the truth to the people out there? Irving cleared his throat. I am not going to debate things with you, Detective. The decision has been made. By you? Yes, by me. What about Stokes? That will be up to the district attorney's office. It could be charged under the felony murder law. His action of fleeing ultimately led to the shooting. It will get technical. If it is determined he was already in custody when the fatal shot occurred, then he might be able to... wait a minute, Bosch said, coming out of his chair. Felony murder law? Did you say fatal shot? Irving turned to face him. Lieutenant Gilmore did not tell you. Bosch dropped back into the chair and put his elbows on the table. He covered his face with his hands. The bullet hit a bone in her shoulder and apparently ricocheted inside her body. It cut through her chest, pierced her heart, and she was dead on arrival. Bosch lowered his face so that his hands were now on top of his head. He felt himself get dizzy, and he thought he might fall out of the chair. He tried to breathe deeply until it passed. After a few moments, Irving spoke into the darkness of his mind. Detective, there are some officers in this department they call shit magnets. I am sure you have heard the term. Personally, I find the phrase distasteful, but its meaning is that things always seem to happen to these particular officers. Bad things. Repeatedly. Always. Bosch waited in the dark for what he knew was coming. Unfortunately, Detective Bosch, you are one of those officers. Bosch unconsciously nodded. He was thinking about the moment that the paramedic put the breathing mask over Julia's mouth as she was speaking. Don't let them... What did she mean? Don't let them what? He was beginning to put things together and to know what she was going to say. Detective, Irving said, his strong voice cutting through Bosch's thoughts. I have shown tremendous patience with you over the cases and over the years, but I have grown tired of it. So has this department. I want you to start thinking about retirement soon, Detective. Soon. Bosch kept his head down and didn't respond. After a moment, he heard the door open and close. Chapter 34. In keeping with the wishes of Julia Brasher's family that she be buried in accordance with her faith, her funeral was late the next morning at Hollywood Memorial Park. Because she had been killed accidentally while in the line of duty, she was accorded the full police burial ceremony, complete with motorcycle procession, honor guard, 21-gun salute, and a generous showing of the department's brass at graveside. The department's aero squadron also flew over the cemetery, 5 helicopters flying in missing man formation. But because the funeral was not even 24 hours after her death, it was not well attended. Line-of-duty deaths routinely bring at least token representations of officers from departments all over the state in the Southwest. It was not to be with Julia Brasher. The quickness of the ceremony and the circumstances of her death added up to it being a relatively small affair by police burial standards. A death in a gun battle would have crowded the small cemetery from stone to stone with the trappings of the Blue Religion. A cop killing herself while holstering her weapon did not engender much of the mythology and danger of police work. The funeral simply wasn't a draw. Bosch watched from the outer edges of the funeral group. His head was throbbing from a night of drinking and trying to dull the guilt and pain he felt. Bones had come out of the ground, and now 2 people were dead for reasons that made little sense to him. His eyes were badly bloodshot and swollen, but he knew he could pass that off, if he had to being sprayed with the tire cleaner by Stokes the day before. He saw Teresa Corazon, for once without her videographer, seated in the front row line of brass and dignitaries, what few of them there were in attendance. She wore sunglasses, but Bosch could tell when she had noticed him. Her mouth seemed to settle into a hard, thin line, a perfect funeral smile. Bosch was the first to look away. It was a beautiful day for a funeral. Brisk overnight winds from the Pacific had temporarily cleared the smog out of the sky. Even the view of the valley from Bosch's home had been clear that morning. Cirrus clouds scuttered across the upper reaches of the sky along with contrails left by high-flying jets. The air in the cemetery smelled sweet from all the flowers arranged near the grave. From his standpoint, Bosch could see the crooked letters of the Hollywood sign, high up on Mount Lee, presiding over the service. The chief of police did not deliver the eulogy as was his custom in line-of-duty deaths. Instead, the academy commander spoke, using the moment to talk about how danger in police work always comes from the unexpected corner, and how Officer Brasher's death might save other cops by being a reminder never to let down the guard of caution. He never called her anything but Officer Brasher during his 10-minute speech, giving it an embarrassingly impersonal touch. During the whole thing, Bosch kept thinking about photos of sharks with open mouths and volcanoes disgorging their molten flows. He wondered if Julia had finally proven herself to the person she believed she needed to. Amidst the blue uniforms surrounding the silver casket was a swath of gray. The lawyers. Her father and a large contingent from the firm. In the second row behind Brasher's father, Bosch could see the man from the photo on the mantel of the Venice bungalow. For a while, Bosch fantasized about going up to him and slapping him or bringing a knee up into his genitals. Doing it right in the middle of the service for all to see, then pointing to the casket and telling the man that he sent her on the path to this. But he let it go. He knew that explanation and assignment of blame was too simple and wrong. Ultimately, he knew, people chose their own path. They can be pointed and pushed, but they always get the final choice. Everybody's got a cage that keeps out the sharks. Those who open the door and venture out do so at their own risk. 7 members of Brasher's rookie class were chosen for the salute.
They pointed rifles toward the blue sky and fired 3 rounds of blanks each, the ejected brass jackets arcing through the light and falling to the grass like tears. While the shots were still echoing off the stones, the helicopters made their pass overhead, and then the funeral was over. Bosch slowly made his way toward the grave, passing people heading away. A hand tugged his elbow from behind, and he turned around. It was Brasher's partner, Edgewood.
I just wanted to apologize about yesterday, about what I did, he said. It won't happen again.
Bosch waited for him to make eye contact, and then just nodded. He had nothing to say to Edgewood.
I guess you didn't mention it to OIS, and I just want to say I appreciate it.
Bosch just looked at him. Edgewood became uncomfortable, nodded once, and walked away. When he was gone, Bosch found himself looking at a woman who had been standing right behind the cop, a Latina with silver hair. It took Bosch a moment to recognize her.
Dr. Hinojos.
Detective Bosch, how are you?
It was the hair. Almost 7 years earlier, when Bosch had been a regular visitor to Hinojos' office, her hair had been a deep brown, without a hint of gray. She was still an attractive woman, gray or brown, but the change was startling.
I'm doing okay. How are things in the psych shop?
She smiled.
They're fine.
I hear you run the whole show now.
She nodded. Bosch felt himself getting nervous. When he had known her before, he had been on an involuntary stress leave. In twice-a-week sessions, he had told her things he had never told anyone before or since. And once he was returned to duty, he had never spoken to her again. Until now.
Did you know Julia Brasher? He asked.
It wasn't unusual for a department shrink to attend a line-of-duty funeral, to offer on-the-spot counseling to those close to the deceased.
No, not really. Not personally. As head of the department, I reviewed her academy application and screening interview. I signed off on it.
She waited a moment, studying Bosch for a reaction.
I understand you were close to her, and that you were there. You were the witness.
Bosch nodded. People leaving the funeral were passing on both sides of them. Hinojos took a step closer to him so that she would not be overheard.
This is not the time or place, but Harry, I want to talk to you about her.
What's there to talk about?
I want to know what happened. And why?
It was an accident. Talk to Chief Irving.
I have, and I'm not satisfied. I doubt you are either.
Listen, Doctor, she's dead, okay? I signed off on her. My signature put that badge on her.
If I missed something, I want to know. If there were signs, we should have seen them.
Bosch nodded and looked down at the grass between them.
Don't worry. There were signs I should have seen, but I didn't put it together either.
She took another step closer. Now Bosch could look nowhere but directly at her.
Then I am right. There is something more to this.
He nodded. Nothing overt. It's just that she lived close to the edge. She took risks. She crossed the tube. She was trying to prove something. I don't think she was even sure she wanted to be a cop.
Prove something to who?
I don't know. Maybe herself, maybe somebody else.
Harry, I knew you as a man of great instincts. What else?
Bosch shrugged.
It's just things she did or said. I have a scar on my shoulder from a bullet wound. She asked me about it, the other night. She asked how I got shot, and I told her how I had been lucky that it hit me where it did because it was all bone.
Then,
where she shot herself, it's the same spot.
Only with her, it ricocheted.
She didn't expect that.
Hinojos nodded and waited.
What I've been thinking, I can't stand thinking. Know what I mean?
Tell me, Harry.
I keep replaying it in my head. What I saw and what I know. She pointed her gun at him, and I think if I hadn't been there and yelled that maybe she would have shot him. Once he was down, she would have wrapped his hands around the gun and fired a shot into the ceiling, or maybe a car. Or maybe into him. It wouldn't matter as long as he ended up dead with paraffin on his hands and she could claim he went for her gun.
What are you suggesting?
That she shot herself in order to kill him and make herself look like a hero? I don't know. She talked about the world needing heroes, especially now. She said she hoped to get a chance to be a hero one day, but I think there was something else in all of this. It was like she wanted the scar, the experience of it. And she was willing to kill for it? I don't know. I don't know if I'm even right about any of this. All I know is that she might have been a rookie, but she had already reached the point where there was a line between us and them, where everybody without a badge is a scumbag. She saw it happening to herself. She might have been just looking for a way out.
Bosch shook his head and looked off to the side. The cemetery was almost deserted now.
I don't know. Saying it out loud makes it sound... I don't know. It's a crazy world. He took a step back from Hinojos.
I guess you never really know anybody, do you? He asked.
You might think you do. You might be close enough to sleep with somebody, but you'll never know what's really going on inside.
No, you won't. Everybody's got secrets.
Bosch nodded and was about to step away.
Wait, Harry.
She lifted her purse and opened it. She started digging through it.
I still want to talk about this, she said as she came out with a business card and handed it to him. I want you to call me. Completely unofficial, confidential. For the good of the department.
Bosch almost laughed. The department doesn't care about it. The department cares about the image, not the truth. And when the truth endangers the image, then fuck the truth.
Well, I care, Harry. And so do you.
Bosch looked down at the card and nodded, and put it in his pocket.
Okay, I'll call you. My cell phone's on there. I carry it with me all the time.
Bosch nodded. She stepped forward and reached out. She grasped his arm and squeezed it.
What about you, Harry? Are you okay?
Well, other than losing her and being told by Irving to start thinking about retiring, I'm doing okay.
Hinojos frowned.
Hang in there, Harry.
Bosch nodded, thinking about how he had used the same words with Julia at the end. Hinojos went off, and Bosch continued his trek to the grave. He thought he was alone now. He grabbed a handful of dirt from the fill mound and walked over and looked down. A whole bouquet and several single flowers had been dropped on top of the casket. Bosch thought about holding Julia in his bed just two nights before. He wished he had seen what was coming. He wished he had been able to take the hints and put them into a clear picture of what she was doing and where she was going. Slowly, he raised his hand out and let the dirt slide through his fingers.
City of Bones, he whispered.
He watched the dirt fall into the grave like dreams disappearing.
I assume you knew her.
Bosch quickly turned. It was her father, smiling sadly. They were the only two left in the cemetery.
Bosch nodded. Just recently, I got to know her. I'm sorry for your loss.
Frederick Brasher. He put out his hand. Bosch started to take it, but then held up.
My hand's dirty. Don't worry. So is mine.
They shook hands.
Harry Bosch.
Brasher's hand stopped its shaking movement for a moment as the name registered.
The detective, he said. You were there yesterday.
Yes, I tried. I did what I could to help her. He stopped. He didn't know what to say.
I'm sure you did.
It must have been an awful thing to be there.
Bosch nodded.
A wave of guilt passed through him like an X-ray lighting his bones. He had left her there, thinking she would be all right. Somehow it hurt almost as bad as the fact she had died. "What I don't understand is how it happened," Brasher said. "A mistake like that, how could it kill her?" And then the district attorney's office today saying this man, Stokes, would not face any charge of the shooting. I'm a lawyer, but I just don't understand. They're letting him go. Bosch studied the older man, saw the misery in his eyes. I'm sorry, sir. I wish I could tell you. I have the same questions as you. Brasher nodded and looked into the grave. I'm going now, he said after a long moment. Thank you for coming, Detective Bosch. Bosch nodded. They shook hands again, and Brasher started to walk away. Sir? Bosch asked. Brasher turned back. Do you know when someone from the family will be going to her house? Actually, I was given her keys today. I was going to go now, take a look at things. Try to get a sense of her, I guess. In recent years, we hadn't... He didn't finish. Bosch stepped closer to him. There's something that she had. A picture in a frame. If it's not... If it's okay with you, I'd like to keep it. Brasher nodded. Why don't you come now? Meet me there. Show me this picture. Bosch looked at his watch. Lieutenant Billets had scheduled a 1:30 meeting to discuss the status of the case. He probably had just enough time to make it to Venice and back to the station. There would be no time for lunch, but he couldn't see himself eating anything anyway. Okay. I will. They parted and headed toward their cars. On the way, Bosch stopped on the grass where the salute had been fired. Combing the grass with his foot, he looked until he saw the glint of brass and bent down to pick up one of the ejected rifle shells. He held it on his palm and looked at it for a few moments, then closed his hand and dropped it into his coat pocket. He had picked up a shell from every cop funeral he had ever attended. He had a jar full of them. He turned and walked out of the cemetery. Chapter 35. Jerry Edgar had a warrant knock that sounded like no other Bosch had ever heard. Like a gifted athlete who can focus the forces of his whole body into the swinging of a bat or the dunking of a basketball, Edgar could put his whole weight and 6'4" frame into his knock. It was as though he could call down and concentrate all the power and fury of the righteous into the fist of his large left hand. He'd plant his feet firmly and stand sideways to the door. He'd raise his left arm, bend the elbow to less than 30 degrees, and hit the door with the fleshy side of his fist. It was a backhand knock, but he was able to fire the pistons of this muscle assembly so quickly that it sounded like the staccato bark of a machine gun. What it sounded like was Judgment Day. Samuel Delacroix's aluminum-skinned trailer seemed to shudder from end to end when Edgar hit its door with his fist at 3:30 on Thursday afternoon. Edgar waited a few seconds, and then hit it again, this time announcing, "Police!" and then stepping back off the stoop, which was a stack of unconnected concrete blocks. They waited. Neither had a weapon out, but Bosch had his hand under his jacket and was gripping his gun in its holster. It was his standard procedure when delivering a warrant on a person not believed to be dangerous. Bosch listened for movements from inside, but the hiss from the nearby freeway was too loud. He checked the windows. None of the closed curtains were moving. "You know," Bosch whispered, "I'm starting to think it comes as a relief when you yell it's just the cops after that knock. At least then they know it's not an earthquake." Edgar didn't respond. He probably knew it was just nervous banter from Bosch. It wasn't anxiety about the door knock. Bosch fully expected Delacroix to be easy. He was anxious because he knew the case was all coming down to the next few hours with Delacroix. They would search the trailer and then have to make a decision, largely communicated in partner's code,
on whether to arrest Delacroix for his son's murder. Somewhere in that process, they would need to find the evidence or elicit the confession that would change a case largely built on theory into one built on lawyer-resistant fact. So in Bosch's mind, they were quickly approaching the moment of truth, and that always made him nervous. Earlier, in the case status meeting with Lieutenant Billets, it had been decided that it was time to talk to Sam Delacroix. He was the victim's father. He was the chief suspect. What little evidence they had still pointed to him. They spent the next hour typing up a search warrant for Delacroix's trailer and taking it to the downtown criminal courts building to a judge who was normally a soft touch. But even this judge took some convincing. The problem was the case was old. The evidence directly linking the suspect was thin, and the place Bosch and Edgar wanted to search was not where the homicide could have occurred and was not even occupied by the suspect at the time of the death. What the detectives had in their favor was the emotional impact that came from the list in the warrant of all the injuries that the boy's bones indicated he had sustained over his short life. In the end, it was all those fractures that won the judge over, and he signed the warrant. They had gone to the driving range first, but were informed that Delacroix was finished driving the tractor for the day. "Give him another shot," Bosch told Edgar outside the trailer.
"I think I can hear him coming."
"I don't care. I want him rattled." Edgar stepped back up onto the stoop and hit the door again. The concrete blocks wobbled, and he didn't plant his feet firmly. The resulting knock didn't carry the power and terror of the first two assaults on the door. Edgar stepped back down.
"That wasn't the police," Bosch whispered. "That was a neighbor complaining about the dog or something."
"Sorry, I..."
The door came open, and Edgar shut up. Bosch went into high alert. Trailers were tricky. Unlike most structures, their doors opened outward so that the interior space didn't have to accommodate the swing. Bosch was positioned on the blind side so that whoever answered was looking at Edgar, but couldn't see Bosch. The problem was Bosch couldn't see whoever had opened the door either. If there was trouble, Edgar's job was to yell a warning to Bosch and get himself clear. Without hesitation, Bosch would empty his gun into the door of the trailer, the bullets tearing through the aluminum and whoever was on the other side like they were paper.
"What?" a man's voice said.
Edgar held up his badge. Bosch studied his partner for any warning sign of trouble.
"Mr. Delacroix, police."
Seeing no sign of alarm, Bosch stepped forward and grabbed the knob and pulled the door all the way open. He kept his jacket flipped back and his hand on the grip of his gun. The man he had seen on the golf range the day before was standing there. He wore an old pair of plaid shorts and a washed-out maroon T-shirt with permanent stains under the arms.
"We have a warrant allowing us to search these premises," Bosch said.
"Can we come in?"
"You guys," Delacroix said. "You guys were at the range yesterday."
"Sir," Bosch said forcefully, "I said that we have a search warrant for this trailer. Can we come in and conduct the search?" Bosch took the folded warrant out of his pocket and held it up, but not within Delacroix's reach. That was the trick. To get the warrant, they had to show all their cards to a judge. But they didn't want to show the same cards to Delacroix. Not just yet. So while Delacroix was entitled to read and study the warrant before granting the detective's entrance, Bosch was hoping to get inside the trailer without that happening. Delacroix would soon know the facts of the case, but Bosch wanted to control the delivery of information to him so that he could take readings and make judgments based on the suspect's reactions. Bosch started putting the warrant back into his inside coat pocket.
"What's this about?" Delacroix asked in muted protest.
"Can I at least see that thing?"
"Are you Samuel Delacroix?" Bosch replied quickly.
"Yes.
This is your trailer, correct, sir?"
"It's my trailer. I lease the spot. I want to read the..."
"Mr. Delacroix," Edgar said.
"We'd rather not stand out here in the view of your neighbors discussing this.
I'm sure you don't want that either.
Are you going to allow us to lawfully execute the search warrant or not?"
Delacroix looked from Bosch to Edgar, and then back to Bosch. He nodded his head. I guess so.
Bosch was first onto the stoop. He entered, squeezing by Delacroix in the threshold and picking up the odor of bourbon and bad breath and cat urine.
Starting early, Mr. Delacroix?
Yeah, I've had a drink, Delacroix said with a mixture of so what and self-loathing in his voice. I'm done my work. I'm entitled.
Edgar came in then. A much tighter squeeze passed Delacroix, and he and Bosch scanned what they could see of the dimly lit trailer. To the right from the doorway was the living room. It was wood-paneled and had a green naugahyde couch and a coffee table with pieces of the wood veneer scraped off, exposing the particle board beneath. There was a matching lamp table with no lamp on it, and a television stand with a TV awkwardly stacked on top of a video cassette recorder. There were several videotapes stacked on top of the television. Across from the coffee table was an old recliner with its shoulders torn open, probably by a cat, and stuffing leaking out. Under the coffee table was a stack of newspapers, most of them gossip tabloids with blaring headlines. To the left was a galley-style kitchen with sink, cabinets, stove, oven, and refrigerator on one side, and a four-person dining booth on the right. There was a bottle of ancient age bourbon on the table. On the floor under the table were a few crumbs of cat food on a plate and an old plastic margarine tub half full of water. There was no sign of the cat, other than the smell of its urine. Beyond the kitchen was a narrow hallway leading back to one or two bedrooms and a bathroom.
"Let's leave the door open and open up a few windows," Bosch said.
"Mr. Delacroix, why don't you sit down on the couch there?"
Delacroix moved toward the couch and said, "Look, you don't have to search the place. I know why you're here."
Bosch glanced at Edgar, and then at Delacroix.
"Yeah?" Edgar said. "Why are we here?"
Delacroix dropped himself heavily into the middle of the couch. The springs were shot. He sank into the midsection, and the ends of the cushion on either side of him rose into the air like the bows of twin Titanics going down.
"The gas," Delacroix said. "And I hardly used any of it. I don't go anywhere but back and forth from the range. I have a restricted license because of my DUI.
"The gas?" Edgar asked. "What are—"
"Mr. Delacroix, we're not here about you stealing gas," Bosch said.
He picked up one of the videotapes off the stack on the television. There was tape on the spine with writing on it. 1st Infantry, Episode 46. He put it back down and glanced at the writing on some of the other tapes. They were all episodes of the television show Delacroix had worked on as an actor more than 30 years before.
"That's not really our gig," he added, without looking at Delacroix.
"Then what? What do you want?"
Now Bosch looked at him.
"We're here about your son." Delacroix stared at him for a long moment, his mouth slowly coming open and exposing his yellowed teeth.
"Arthur," he finally said.
"Yeah. We found him."
Delacroix's eyes dropped from Bosch's and seemed to leave the trailer as he studied a far-off memory. In his look was knowledge.
Bosch saw it.
His instincts told him that what they would tell Delacroix next, he would already know. He glanced over at Edgar to see if he had seen it. Edgar gave a single, short nod. Bosch looked back at the man on the couch.
"You don't seem very excited for a father who hasn't seen his son in more than 20 years, he said.
Delacroix looked at him.
"I guess that's because I know he's dead."
Bosch studied him for a long moment, his breath holding in his lungs.
"Why would you say that?
What would make you think that?"
"Because I know. I've known all along."
"What have you known?"
"That he wasn't coming back."
This wasn't going the way of any of the scenarios Bosch had imagined. It seemed to him that Delacroix had been waiting for them, expecting them, maybe for years. He decided that they might have to change the strategy and arrest Delacroix and advise him of his rights.
Am I under arrest? Delacroix asked, as if he had joined Bosch in his thoughts.
Bosch glanced at Edgar again, wondering if his partner had sensed how their plan was now slipping away from them.
We thought we might want to talk first. You know, informally.
You might as well arrest me, Delacroix said quietly.
You think so? Does that mean you don't want to talk to us?
Delacroix shook his head slowly and went into the long-distance stare again.
No, I'll talk to you, he said. I'll tell you all about it.
Tell us about what?
How it happened.
How what happened?
My son.
You know how it happened?
Sure I know. I did it.
Bosch almost cursed out loud. Their suspect had literally just confessed before they had advised him of his rights, including the right to avoid giving self-incriminating statements.
Mr. Delacroix, we're going to cut this off right here. I'm going to advise you of your rights now. I just want...
No. Please, sir, don't say anything else.
Not yet.
Let's get this rights thing taken care of, and then we'll be more than happy to listen to anything you want to tell us about.
Delacroix waved a hand like it didn't matter to him. Like nothing mattered.
Jerry, where's your recorder? I never got mine back from IAD.
In the car. I don't know about the batteries, though.
Go check.
Edgar left the trailer and Bosch waited in silence. Delacroix put his elbows on his knees and his face in his hands. Bosch studied his posture. It didn't happen often, but it wouldn't be the first time he had scored a confession during his first meeting with a suspect. Edgar came back in with a tape recorder, but shook his head.
They're dead. I thought you had yours.
Shit. Then take notes.
Bosch took out his badge case and took out one of his business cards. It had them made with the Miranda Rights Advisory printed on the back, along with the signature line. He read the advisory statement and asked Delacroix if he understood his rights. Delacroix nodded his head.
Is that a yes?
Yes, it's a yes.
Then sign on the line beneath what I just read to you.
He gave Delacroix the card and a pen. Once it was signed, Bosch returned the card to his badge wallet. He stepped over and sat on the edge of the recliner chair.
Now, Mr. Delacroix, do you want to repeat what you just said to us a few minutes ago?
Delacroix shrugged like it was no big deal.
I killed my son, Arthur. I killed him. I knew you people would show up someday. It took a long time.
Bosch looked over at Edgar. He was writing in a notebook. They would have some record of Delacroix's admission. He looked back at the suspect and waited, hoping the silence would be an invitation for Delacroix to say more. But he didn't. Instead, the suspect buried his face in his hands again. His shoulders soon began shaking as he started to cry.
God help me. I did it.
Bosch looked back at Edgar and raised his eyebrows. His partner gave a quick thumbs-up sign. They had more than enough to move to the next stage, the controlled and recorded setting of an interview room at the police station.
Mr. Delacroix, do you have a cat? Bosch asked.
Where's your cat?
Delacroix peeked his wet eyes through his fingers.
He's around. Probably sleeping in the bed. Why?
Well, we're going to call animal control, and they'll come get him to take care of him.
You're going to have to come with us. We're going to place you under arrest now, and we'll talk more at the police station.
Delacroix dropped his hands and seemed upset.
No. Animal control won't take care of him. They'll gas him the minute they find out I won't be coming back.
Well, we can't just leave him here.
Mrs. Kresge will take care of him. She's next door. She can come in and feed him.
Bosch shook his head. The whole thing was foundering because of a cat.
We can't do that. We have to seal this place until we can search it.
What do you have to search it for? Delacroix said, real anger in his voice now.
I'm telling you what you need to know. I killed my son. It was an accident. I hit him too hard, I guess.
Delacroix put his face back into his hands and tearfully mumbled,
God, what did I do?
Bosch checked Edgar. He was writing. Bosch stood up. He wanted to get Delacroix to the station and into one of the interview rooms. His anxiety was gone now, replaced by a sense of urgency. Attacks of conscience and guilt were ephemeral. He wanted to get Delacroix locked down on tape, video and audio, before he decided to talk to a lawyer, and before he realized that he was talking himself into a 9x6 room for the rest of his life. Okay, we'll figure out the cat thing later, he said. We'll leave enough food for now. Stand up, Mr. Delacroix. We're going to go. Delacroix stood up.
Can I change into something nicer? This is just old stuff I was wearing around here.
No, don't worry about that, Bosch said. We'll bring you clothes to wear later on. He didn't bother telling him that those clothes wouldn't be his.
What would happen was that he'd be given a county jail-issued jumpsuit with a number across the back. His jumpsuit would be yellow, the color given to custodies on the high-power floor. The murderers.
Are you going to handcuff me? Delacroix asked.
It's department policy, Bosch said. We have to.
He came around the coffee table and turned Delacroix so he could cuff his hands behind his back.
I was an actor, you know. I once played a prisoner in an episode of The Fugitive. The first series, with David Janssen. It was just a small role. I sat on a bench next to Janssen. That's all I did. I was supposed to be on drugs, I think.
Bosch didn't say anything. He gently pushed Delacroix toward the trailer's narrow door.
I don't know why I just remembered that, Delacroix said.
It's all right, Edgar said. People remember the strangest things at a time like this.
Just be careful on these steps, Bosch said. They let him out, Edgar in front and Bosch behind him. Is there a key? Bosch asked.
On the kitchen counter there, Delacroix said.
Bosch went back inside and found the keys. He then started opening cabinets in the kitchenette until he found the box of cat food. He opened it and dumped it out onto the paper plate under the table. There was not very much food. Bosch knew he would have to do something about the animal later. When Bosch came out of the trailer, Edgar had already put Delacroix into the rear of the slickback. He saw a neighbor watching from the open front door of a nearby trailer. He turned and closed and locked Delacroix's door.
Chapter 36
Bosch stuck his head into Lieutenant Billet's office. She was turned sideways at her desk and working on a computer at a side table. Her desk had been cleared. She was about to go home for the day. Yes, she said, without looking to see who it was.
Looks like we got lucky, Bosch said.
She turned from the computer and saw it was Bosch.
Let me guess. Delacroix invites you in and just sits down and confesses.
Bosch nodded.
Just about.
Her eyes grew wide in surprise.
You are fucking kidding me.
He says he did it. We had to shut him up so we could get him back here on tape. It was like he had been waiting for us to show up.
Billets asked a few more questions, and Bosch ended up recapping the entire visit to the trailer, including the problem they had in not having a working tape recorder with which to take Delacroix's confession. Billets grew concerned and annoyed, equally with Bosch and Edgar for not being prepared, and Bradley of IAD for not returning Bosch's tape recorder.
All I can say is that this better not put hair on the cake, Harry, she said, referring to the possibility of a legal challenge to any confession because Delacroix's initial words were not on tape. If we lose this one because of a screw-up on our part...
She didn't finish, but didn't need to.
Look, I think we'll be all right. Edgar got everything he said down verbatim. We stopped as soon as we got enough to hook him up, and now we'll lock it all down with sound and video.
Billet seemed barely placated.
And what about Miranda?
You're confident we will not have a Miranda situation, she said.
The last part not a question, but an order. I don't see it,